Welcome, everyone. The meeting is about to begin. Please note today's call is being recorded. Please stand by.
Good afternoon. My name is Elisa Montali, and I'm with the National Quality Forum. I'd like to welcome you to this conference call for the National Voluntary Consensus Standards for Patient Safety Measures. During this call, the steering committee will review comments that were submitted on the healthcare-associated infection draft report. The report was available on the NQF website for a 30-day public and member comment period from October 8th through November 8th. This call is open to NQF members and to the public who will have opportunities at several points during the agenda to provide additional comments. Measure developers reviewed all the comments that were submitted and provided their responses in advance of today's call. Those comments and responses will be displayed on screen, and developers will also participate on the call to provide further clarification. I just wanted to give you a little bit of background on the comments that we received before I turn it over to your co-chair, Dr. Conway. We received 117 comments on the five HAI measures that the steering committee recommended for endorsement, 32 of which were in support of the measures, and 85 requested further clarification on the measure specifications or raised concerns about harmonization and best-in-class determination, particularly as they relate to the two surgical site infection measures and two urinary tract infection measures. Several comments also addressed data collection and cost burden concerns associated with implementation. The committee will review those concerns, and they will review them in this order. They will first discuss the scientific acceptability issues, and then they'll enter into detailed discussion on the global issues related to harmonization, best-in-class, and feasibility. NQF staff will project on screen the table of comments and available responses and a comparison chart for both the SSI measures and the UTI measures. So at this point, I will turn it over to the committee's co-chair, Dr. William Conway.
Okay. Thank you, Elisa.
You're welcome.
But since we have a fair amount to process today, help me out here, Elisa. What I'd like to do is hear from the first measure developer and then pause and see if those responses are acceptable to the committee and then do the second one. Does that sound reasonable, Elisa?
That's very reasonable.
And I want to point out we're going to need a fair chunk of time to take on the harmonization discussion, so I really don't want to begin that much later than 3:10.
Okay.
We could be really efficient up to that point. It would help us have enough time for that.
Okay.
All right. So our first measure developer is who, Elisa?
We have both the American College of Surgeons and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They are both on the call. So the first measure is the CLABSI measure, and so that's the CDC measure. So I think Dr. Dan Pollack is on the call.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we've provided comments back, responses back to comments. And how would you like me to proceed in doing this?
I think if you would discuss the comments and then your response to each of those. I know some of them are overlapping, and so you may need to just respond once. I think that would be helpful for the group.
Okay. So a lot of the comments concerned, or several of the comments concerned, the use of a standardized infection ratio, SIR metric. So, for example, comment 31, which begins one issue around NQF's own criteria for scientific acceptability of this CLABSI metric, the use of SIRs measure rated low for scientific acceptability among Cleveland Clinic colleagues, concern that use of SIR as a reporting rate will be misleading, especially to the public. The proposed mechanism of risk adjustment is not sufficient and does not correct for hospitals that have a significant problem of patients with inherent risks for bloodstream infection, for example, that is, immunocompromised patients. Furthermore, it does not appear to adequately adjust for centers that receive a high percentage of patient transfers. Basically, it does not adequately or sufficiently risk adjust for the actual acuity of patients. The public is not aware of some of these nuances, for example, confidence intervals and what they mean. So publishing SIRs may be misleading. That is, understanding confidence intervals and what they mean. Another issue with NHSN definitions is interfacility variability. Increasingly in the literature, there are reports of significant variability in the application of NHSN definitions. This raises the issue of validity testing, which is utilized in only a few states, and when performed, produces higher rates. Another comment, number 102, says that our proposal calls for use of SIR to monitor surgical site infection rates. Our evaluation of SSI was confined to, of the SIR was confined to CLABSI, and we are not aware of similar evaluations to ensure SIR is reliable for the interhospital comparison of SSI. So this is a comment that covered, to an extent, both CLABSI and SSI in the use of the SIR, to summarize both. So our response is that the SIR metric is identical in methodology to a standardized mortality ratio applied to infection events instead of death. The SMR methodology is fundamental to the teaching and practice of epidemiology and is widely used and accepted in public health reporting. The CLABSI SIR metric is based on ecological data reported for a given patient care location, that is, type of ICU or ward, and not collected on the patient level. This type of summary reporting neither allows for adjustment of patient-specific risk factors nor provides comprehensive assessment of patient case mix. We agree with the commenter that interpretive guidance should accompany SIR reporting as it should be as it should for public reporting of any HAI metric. We admit that the level of understanding of the SIR needs to be raised. However, this calls for education and information rather than abandoning a metric that has attributes which make it easier to understand. The SIR metric allows infection experience to be summarized and is more easily interpreted than any variable schedule of stratified infection rates. CDC is actively funding and promoting validation of infection reporting, and further comments are provided in other sections of our response about the validation efforts. Now, specific to the SSI, the SSI SIR metric is based on logistic regression models that predict deep incisional and organ space SSI detected on admission and readmission. These models improve risk adjustment beyond the formerly developed and simpler risk index. CDC promotes comparisons of facility-specific SSI experience with that of the national experience through SIRs based on these regression models. However, the improved risk adjustment afforded by these models enables a more fair comparison of any SSI experience for intra- or inter-hospital comparisons because they help account for differences of patient case mix. It is the differences in case mix among facilities that gives rise to any shifting base distortions. Then one other comment specific to CLABSIs is comment 39. Which begins, the measure of CLABSI rates as it exists today is useful. However, some recent reports in the literature highlight the difficulty with this measure. Units with higher rates had more structured monitoring and reporting structures than some with lower rates, highlighting possible data validity issues. A perception could be created that sites could be punished for being scrupulous in their monitoring program. One significant issue that needs to be raised regarding the definitions is more clarity from the CDC on what actually constitutes an infection in another site. Examples include a bone marrow transplant patient who is having an episode of graft-versus-host disease, who is sloughing his or her GI tract and aligning and becoming septic. This is not really a CLABSI, but it is difficult to document the infection at another site. Another example is the patient with a deep-seated infection that has been incompletely treated and develops a positive blood culture, or a patient with a deep-seated infection that has not yet been detected. The first positive culture might be a blood culture, and the infection at the deeper site might not be determined until many days later. It is likely that these scenarios would and have in our own institution been classified differently by different infection control practitioners. And our response is, the misclassification is CLABSI of secondary bloodstream infections associated with an infection in another body site, such as a GI tract infection, can and does occur. We're reviewing the definition of infections for those body sites where this has been reported and occurs, and revising them so that this type of misclassification can be eliminated to the fullest extent. So those are some comments that speak to the CLABSI measure proposal and our responses.
Any questions or comments from the committee members? the committee members find that the response acceptable? Comments on that? Simple yes would be helpful.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, how about the next one?
The next measure developer is the American College of Surgeons, and Dr. Bruce Hall is on the call representing the ACS. Operator?
Hi, this is Bruce Hall.
Okay.
Do you want me to comment on both of our measures, or which measure are you soliciting?
If you can comment and somewhat summarize the responses that you provided to us, and so go through the comments that you received and the major comments that you received and your responses, that would be great. Then we'll talk about the harmonization issues and best in class after that.
All right, thank you. We've received comments on both our 007 measure, which applies to urinary tract, as well as the 006 measure, which applies to surgical site infection. Some of the comments were about the burden of data collection. We have, we believe, very clearly and explicitly estimated what we believe the burden of data collection is, which we think is much more information than most measure developers have given in the past, but we've been very explicit about it. I'm trying to look to see what some of the other common comments were. One was for the urinary tract measure that we don't standardize by catheter usage or by catheter days. We feel that using a process measure such as catheter usage or catheter days kind of misses the point that the outcome is what's important. If you, for instance, standardize by catheter use days, then you take away an incentive to drive down those catheter use days. Or if you standardize by use of catheter versus not, again, you take away the incentive to drive down the use of the catheter at all. So undoubtedly, there are perennial issues about using a process versus using an outcome measure. We feel very strongly that our outcome-based measure captures the most relevant information in a much more important way. Some questions we received were about the cost of the program. Again, we've modeled and estimated what we think the burden of the program will be based on 10 years or so of collection of data such as these data within NSQIP. Some of the questions asked whether participation in the NSQIP is a requirement for the measure or whether the fees that are associated with the full NSQIP would apply to these measures. The answers to those questions are no. These measures are based on the experience of NSQIP, but they do not require participation in that program, and they do not carry any fees that are attached to those programs. The harmonization issues, we received a couple of questions about those, and Dan and I will be happy to comment on those when we hit that discussion. Some of the questions were about whether the measure applies inside or outside of the ICU or inside or outside of the hospital. And here the NSQIP program history has been based on a rigid 30-day outcome after surgery. So we encompass all of these settings to whatever degree that they are captured within 30 days after surgery, and we feel that that's a major value aspect of our program. Looking down the list, seeing a couple more harmonization issues. One question was about that follow-up, 30-day follow-up endpoint and whether we would be willing to give more specific guidelines about how many times a patient needs to be contacted or attempted to be contacted and so on. We would be happy to give guidance on those issues, but again, we feel that the most important issue is to achieve a very, very high rate of follow-up for the rigid 30-day outcome, and our experience is that that's quite feasible within our program in the past. So to whatever extent we could provide some additional guidance on that issue, we'll be happy to do that. Scouring down for any more common remarks. One question that we received for both of our measures had to do with why we use CPT codes when institutions more commonly have available ICD-9 codes. The NSQIP has traditionally been based on CPT codes. The reason for this is not an issue of expediency. It is because the surgical profession sees CPT codes as significantly more granular and meaningful, and especially when it comes to performance assessment, the profession has developed a much higher level of trust around the CPT codes. Currently, we have 400 or more hospitals in NSQIP programs, different programs, and the experience within all of these hospitals is that CPT information is available in one way or another. It's true that different hospitals may have to develop different approaches to obtaining the CPT information, but we feel that that is a real value aspect of our approach. Seeing a couple more comments about 30 days, and I'm almost through, I think, the major issues on the list. There was one or two comments where there was, I think, a misunderstanding of the burden of the measure. One commenter in particular, number 136, stated that 26 different variables had to be collected, and that's an unfortunate mistake. Again, the risk adjustment for the surgical site infection measure has 3 risk adjustment variables and 2 outcomes. And so we just wanted to clarify that. So we very explicitly have modeled the burden based on those specific data structures. I think those are the major points. I'll be happy to take any additional questions, but for the sake of time, I'll cut it there.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee members?
This is Janet. I just have one question about that 30-day follow-up. Operationally, I'm guessing that that most of this is in an outpatient setting. So is it like an electronic query in most places, or is it actual phone calls to individuals?
So the first step in the algorithm is to check to see whether the physician's records comment on any outcomes at a date that is more than 30 days or more from the surgery. And in many of our institutions, it's the case that information is available in the medical record that represents that time point. And if that's the case, then no other steps necessarily need to be taken. If that's not the case, then institutions can either call or write letters, send letters to the patients. And at my institution, we do a mixture of both, but different institutions may have a different mixture of those two activities. And so either by phone or in writing, the patients are contacted to confirm or deny the existence of any issues at the 30-day after surgery time frame. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. And so you say most are available, like 80%, 90% you can get just electronically?
At my institution, that number is probably pretty good. I would hesitate to say that that's true of every institution, because obviously, as we all know, the penetration of electronic medical records is very different in different institutions. So I would say that is certainly the case at many of our institutions, but I would not want to incorrectly say it's true of all institutions.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Go ahead.
This is Iona from Utah. Quick question. I wanted to go back over your rationale for the outcome versus process measures. So as you described that this outcome measure, these two outcome measures are fairly well specified, are there process measures associated with this outcome that would tilt the scale one way or the other in terms of poor or better outcome as associated with practices associated with the surgical infections and the catheter-related infections? Does the evidence currently address that at all?
Well, there's certainly a developed collection of what I would call best evidence around surgical site infection processes and urinary tract infection processes plus minus use of catheters. Our measures don't rely on any particular best practice. In other words, as an outcome measure, we're able to actually maintain independence of process metrics that might apply to this issue. So again, using the example of urinary tract infection, it is well established that the use of a catheter dramatically changes that patient's risk of urinary tract infection. But if you standardize by number of days a catheter is in place, and it's kind of like you're giving an institution credit for using the catheter in particular situations, we would prefer to separate ourselves from that and to say it is the outcome that is the important issue here. So to answer your question, for instance, even within our existing NSQIP program, we do provide guidance to our own institutions about best practices surrounding some of these issues, but we have not specified best practices as part of either of these proposed measures. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does, and I understand the rationale. I'm a little bit worried about outcomes without any process information. But what you're saying to me is that, or at least what I'm interpreting, is that on a national level, there, if this were an accepted measure, we could judge outcomes regardless of process. But it seems to me that so you have some facilities that might have certain kinds of processes in place and are doing well versus not, but it limits that knowledge to the individual facility's best practice as opposed to saying there is a best practice associated with better outcomes and, you know, somehow looking at those links. But that may be beyond the scope of this discussion.
Other questions from the committee members?
Yeah, this is Steve Lawless from the Moores. A quick question for you about data collection or the burden of collection. You may have addressed this, if you could just clarify. Using NISQIP, experience with NISQIP is there is an intensity in the NISQIP centers in terms of data collection and scrutiny of the data. Do you see a big difference between those centers which are already using NISQIP versus those who are not using NISQIP and trying to collect the same data in terms of that same level of scrutiny?
So I think that your question is deceptively complex because in the past, as measure developers, we've struggled with what issues belong in the discussion of a measure and what issues belong in the discussion of the implementation of a measure. So, for instance, we have discussed implementation of these measures from a theoretical perspective with CMS, and we very much feel that if either of these measures were put into place, that they would be attached to online training modules about the definitions of these five important variables and the implementation of those five important variables, as well as the program of these measures would be attached to an approach for auditing. So we feel, for instance, that these mechanisms, online training and an attached auditing algorithm, would provide the robustness and validity that you're referring to, which is characteristic of our NSQIP program on the whole. But at the same time, we sort of feel that those are implementation measures, implementation issues, rather than characteristics of the measure. Now, obviously, all of these things are intertwined at some level. But we very much feel that these measures would benefit from our experience with training our data people, with online resources, and with approaches to auditing that we feel are very important.
Do you have an estimate of the burden of that would cost would be on a non-NISQIP site?
So we do estimate the burden for FTE on collection of the measures in our submitted materials. But, as far as auditing goes, that would be driven by the implementing institution.
Okay.
By the implementing organization. Mm-hmm. That would not be a burden on the institutions themselves.
How's it going?
Thank you.
Any other question on the College of Surgeon measures? Okay. Elisa, I think there's two other CDC measures yet to cover. Is that correct?
Yes. So we have the UTI measure, the CLABSI, and the SSI measure from CDC, and then from the ACS is the UTI and SSI measure.
Right. We've just covered the two ACS measures. I don't think the Don, did you get to talk about SSI or catheter UTIs?
No, I don't think so yet.
Okay. We'd like to hear about your responses to the questions.
Of course. So for the catheter-associated urinary tract infection, I think two of the more important comments were numbers 18 and 19. And 18 is cost to implement. What were these estimates based on? What actual data used? The actual cost seems lower than anticipated or compared to the alternative measure. Identification of patients through surveillance of charts, reviewing the charts and uploading the data would appear to be significantly more time-consuming and labor-intensive besides validating the data before uploading, as well as the cost of educating a personnel. Are there any published studies or better estimates of the cost? And our response is that we work very hard to get estimates of cost that are as accurate as possible, and we do that because our estimates must pass muster with the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, which reviews data requirements in federal statistical systems pursuant to the Paperwork Reduction Act. So we have a process in where we take into account the user experience of NHSN users, those who have familiarity with the system and or experience data collection and experience with the data collection and data entry fields, as well as NHSN infection preventionist staff themselves to estimate the total time it takes to identify cases, collect and enter the data. So in answer to the question, we think that the cost estimates based on the calculation of work effort are as accurate as we can make them. Second comment, 19, with reference to the catheter-associated urinary tract infection measure. This measure appears to look for the UTI rate and encourage hospitals to achieve a lower rate on the next round of reporting. The idea appears to be looking at internal data compared to external goals or benchmarks, data to support utilizing your metric to support this improvement model based on actual outcomes should have been clearer and easier to evaluate and look up. The risk adjustment model appears to be based on a comparison of 15 different types of ICUs. What types of ICUs were included and were there differences based on ICU types? Are the risk-adjusted results similar based on the type of ICU? Is there a comparison for large regional referral centers or based on ICU size, not just type? And you've mentioned under 4D in the measure evaluation form that the NHSN reporting tool tries to minimize inaccuracies, and there's some sort of business logic built into this report to minimize inaccuracies. Could you elaborate and explain? Our response is that in our 2009 NHSN annual report, we provide county rates for the following ICU types with some additional stratification by hospital type. So we do take hospital type into account in the analysis and include hospital type as part of the annual report that we publish. And the hospital type that's reported in the 2009 annual report is major teaching hospital, which was defined as a hospital which is an important part of the medical school, and the majority of medical students rotate through multiple clinical services at it. With that said, therefore, the categories that we use in reporting the CAUTI, the catheter-associated urinary tract infection rates, for ICUs are burn, medical cardiac, major medical teaching, medical all others, medical surgical major teaching, medical surgical all others with 15 beds or less, medical surgical others with more than 15 beds, neurological, neurosurgical, pediatric cardiothoracic, pediatric medical, pediatric medical surgical, surgical cardiothoracic, and trauma. So in other words, we have both hospital and ICU location types as well as other types of location that can be reported using CAUTI data. The CAUTI rates that we report differ depending on ICU type. So, for example, in that 2009 annual report that I referred to, rates range from a high of 7.4 in burn and neurological ICUs to a low of 3.1 in non-major teaching medical surgical ICUs with more than 15 beds. And these rate differences point to the usefulness of stratifying Audi incidents by ICU type, so we've made it a practice to do that. The NHSN system contains logic related to various data quality issues, using the admission, birth, and event dates, as well as patient symptoms and laboratory data required as part of the NHSN criteria. The system will not allow the following non-CAUDI events to be entered: events with admission dates occurring after event dates, events which do not meet the NHSN UTI criteria, events utilizing age-specific criterion for a patient outside the accepted age range. System safeguards assist in preventing the inclusion of asymptomatic bacteriuria cases, community-acquired UTIs, and other cases that do not fit the UTI case definition. Further, if the use of an indwelling urinary catheter is not documented within 48 hours prior to the UTI, the infection will not be identified as a CAUDI nor included in the CAUDI data. So that's our response to the comments that related to CAUDI.
Okay, any questions for Don?
Nope.
Okay. All right, so was that, let's see, that was both measures, right?
Well, that was the CAUDI and the CLABS that we've covered. We haven't covered SSI.
Right. Let's move on to that.
Would you like us to do that?
Please.
Okay. What I'd like to do first is talk about SSI, and then there were a number of comments that cut across all measures that address data validation issues.
Okay.
So the SSI comment that I'm responding to now is number 93. Why limit to only 10 procedures? What percentage of overall surgeries do these 10 account for? What percentage of overall SSI do these 10 account for? Why only IP-based procedures, inpatient-based procedures? The majority of surgical procedures are done on an outpatient basis. Agree with blending the two SSI measure proposals. No apparent obvious reasons for having two separate measures. Our response is that the 10 surgical procedure categories correspond to the surgical procedures currently included in the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services Surgical Care Improvement Project, SCIP. SSIs in these procedures can add significantly to SSI-associated morbidity and mortality due to the large volume of such procedures performed and because of the severe medical consequences that can result. Our inclusion of the SCIP procedures also addresses an oft-heard request for collaboration between CMS and CDC. While the current measurement only includes inpatient procedures, we agree that SSI prevention in the outpatient arena is also an important issue. Many of the large number of surgical procedures now performed on an outpatient basis involve procedures previously performed exclusively on inpatients. Unfortunately, infection prevention resources are limited in outpatient surgical centers, creating a challenge in data collection. Also, standardized, optimal data collection methods in this setting have yet to be agreed upon, calling into question the interfacility comparability of the data. Finally, the most common outpatient procedures are not currently included in NHSN operative procedure categories, although we are actively working to identify those procedures and to determine their importance in SSI surveillance and possible useful methodologies for their surveillance. This plan is incorporated in what's referred to as Tier 2, the second phase of the Department of Health and Human Services Action Plan to Prevent Healthcare-Associated Infections. In short, we agree that outpatient surgical SSI surveillance is needed, and though we are working to address this challenge, the NHSN is not yet optimally developed for this purpose, nor is the field really primed to use the type of methods and system that's available for inpatient SSI monitoring. Data validation. There are a number of comments, 118, 19, 120, 121, that are very similar and use, in fact, in some cases, identical language. So, for example, 118 says, with reference to the CAUDI measure, the most controversial point about this measure, is that only a handful of states actually require validation of the reporting. As noted recently, states with validation had consistently higher standardized infection ratios. Similar comment is made with respect to SSIs and CLABSIs. And 121 says that the Infectious Disease Society of America is generally supportive of the patient safety measures and does not think there's too much controversy there. CDC has already started using the standardized infection ratio for reporting infection rates at the state level from NHSN. I don't think it's too controversial. So in response And then they go on to say, that said, the most controversial point about the CDC measure is that only a handful of states actually require validation of the reporting. As noted recently, states with validation had consistently higher SIRs. CDC response is, we agree that data validation is an important safeguard against underreporting of healthcare-associated infection data. In addition to the five states that took their own initiative in validating HAI data reported from hospitals in their jurisdiction to CDC's National Healthcare Safety Network, data validation by seven more states has been completed or initiated as a result of CDC funding. Additional states beyond those 12 are expected to pursue data validation using Recovery Act funds also administered by CDC. We understand the commenter's concern about the impact of data validation or lack of data validation on reported standardized infection ratios, SIRs. However, the observation that underlies the commenter's concern, states with validation had consistently higher SIRs than other states, overlooks the fact that in CDC's initial report of state-specific SIRs, only two of the five states that had validated HAI data had SIRs that were significantly higher than one. A simple ranking of state SIRs, as this commenter has done, does not take into account the confidence intervals around each of the calculated SIR. Still, we agree with the commenter's fundamental point, and CDC recommends in the initial report of state-specific SIRs that, quote, a major consideration for interpretation of these data and for future reports includes assessing the confidence in the validity of the data reported. That was our response to the data validation comments that were raised across the various measures, as well as our response to the SSI comment concerning which procedures are included in the measure proposal.
Thank you. Committee questions? Okay. Does the committee have any further questions of either of the measure developers?
No.
Okay. Do the responses that we've been given sound acceptable to the committee members?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. Elisa, should we move on to public and member comment?
Yes, exactly.
We open the lines for that?
Operator?
Please go ahead.
Are there any public or member comments out there? Okay. Elisa, should we move on to a discussion of feasibility?
I think so. I think some of these issues have been talked about already, but we can move on to that and then into the discussion about harmonization for determining best in class.
Do the committee members have anything to say about data collection or cost burden associated with all these measures?
This is Steve Laws. I think it just has to be maybe better quantified that what the overall cost burden would be for anybody on this in terms of the data collection.
Okay. Is there any comment from either measure developer in response to that? I thought we had quantified that fairly well in the application.
This is Bruce Hall. I mean, from the ACS perspective, we've given an estimate of the burden. There are no associated cost fees. But at the same time, I think it would be difficult to be any more specific about the burden since the different hospitals that might be involved could have different systems. So we've tried to be very explicit and very transparent about the burden based on 10 years of experience. But I think it would be hard to take it to the level of, an exact number of dollars because the institutions can represent a fair amount of heterogeneity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And this is Dan Pollack at CDC. We have submitted the cost estimates, and we have nothing further to add to that.
Okay. Any other committee comments on the data collection or cost burden? Okay, Lisa, do we want to open the lines for general comments about that?
We don't need to at this point.
Don't need to. Okay. We'll
go ahead with the discussion.
Shall we move on to harmonization?
Yes.
This is ahead of planned.
Yes.
Okay. Who would like to start out that discussion? It's obvious we've got a large number of comments. I guess most of them urging us to pick one or the other measure, and we're open for the committee's thoughts on that topic.
And Dr. Conway, we just wanted you to know that we're pulling up the side-by-side comparison of the two UTI measures on the screen, and then after discussion of this, we'll pull up the SSI measure comparison.
Okay, so maybe we should take these one at a time. We'll talk about SSI first, or just talk about the general topic.
I think we can talk about the UTI measures first and then move on to the SSI measures.
Okay.
This is Iona from Utah. Have the developers looked at the harmonization question, and do they have any comments about it?
Good idea. Bruce or Don?
Dan Pollack here at CDC. There has been said a number of comments that call for harmonization. We've responded, for example, to comment 41 with the following. A concerted effort is underway at the CDC and the American College of Surgeons to harmonize measure specifications. The initial phase of this effort focuses on surgical site infection measure harmonization. A preliminary exchange of information and commitment by both organizations to an expedited review process and decision-making about harmonization has been completed. The next step is a meeting planned for December 2nd, 3rd, 2010, next month, at CDC, in which both organizations will have opportunities to ask detailed questions about data requirements, predictive risk modeling methodology, and the predictors included in the SSI measure proposals submitted to the National Quality Forum. The exchange of information on December 2nd, 3rd will set the stage for decision-making about measure harmonization.
Okay, at the risk of offending the developers, would it be advisable to wait until after you guys have met and come to terms with where there's commonality and where there's differences and the rationale for those differences?
So this is Dan Pollack at CDC. We're certainly comfortable with that. We think we're making good progress in establishing the ground rules and context for the harmonization meeting that we're going to have in Atlanta. But we do have to meet and discuss the overall objectives of the harmonization as well as the specific details of what would be required to achieve harmonization. So we do need additional time.
So, Elisa, from a process perspective, is it appropriate to make that kind of recommendation as a committee member?
This is Heidi with NQF.
Okay.
Dan, let me just ask you one more question just because we're trying to balance here the needs of CMS as well as making sure that the committee and everyone has adequate time to evaluate these measures. So if you all are meeting in the first week of December, it sounds like, but it sounds like that may not be the only meeting that will be required. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. We're optimistic but cautious about it, and the focus is on SSIs at this point in time.
Okay, so that helps to know that maybe for the committee as they talk this through, and there's a potential, and again, I think we should have a conversation and see if you can determine whether you would want to put any of these measures forward now. It sounds like you might be able to do that with the Class B and the UTI measure and having to probably discuss best in class because if I'm understanding what Dan says, and Bruce, jump in too, the UTI would not be harmonized at this point. That's not under discussion. It's just the SSI. So I think you all can potentially make a request that we hold off on the SSI measure. We would have to, as staff here, go talk to CMS and see if that is going to work for them or not. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we'll have to set a deadline. So I think you all need to have your, continue to have the conversation, discuss the different measures, and then let us do some quick turnaround work here on our end to talk to CMS and see about deadlines for this phase. So I think you can keep it as a possibility, but there's a potential that you all may have to actually come to some decision over the next couple days. Sorry, it's not a nice, clear-cut answer.
Lisa?
Yeah, this is Peter Angood. I'll just reiterate what Heidi's saying, and there's clearly this third arm. This is not just ACS and CDC. We're undergoing this whole HAI measures review at the request of CMS within the Department of HHS so that we can help them with their upcoming rules and regs for the coming years. So we can deliberate as a steering committee, but we still may need to respond positively in some fashion to CMS. And so depending on the deliberations of the surgeons and CDC, this may actually need to be a two-step process.
And, Elisa, this is Karen Pace. Can I make a comment?
Sure, Karen.
Just to kind of clarify whether we're talking about harmonization or competing measures, harmonization is only an issue if we're going to recommend endorsement of two measures. Then they really should be harmonized. If the committee thinks there should be one measure, then they need to pick the best measure. So, or identify that we need more than one measure. And so these are close, but there are differences. And I guess the first baseline question is whether they're different enough that they are both important to measure. And then there is a harmonization issue. But if they're, you know, really, you know, getting at the same thing but in different ways, then we need to at least ask the question, is one superior over the other? So you see what I'm saying? I mean, harmonization is if we're going to have two measures endorsed, we want, you know, definitions of the infections to be harmonized, et cetera.
Good point. Thank you.
So this is Iona. Just so that I understand better, so the NSQIP measures are CPT code-based, and the NHSN measures, and correct me, developers, if I have a wrong interpretation, is ICP, IP interpretation and manually reported or, you know, inputted into the NHSN data system. Database. It's not CPT. It's you have a list of CPT procedures upon which you're making a decision about infections, and it's my understanding that that is more of a clinical judgment. Am I wrong? Am I out of the ballpark on that? I'm trying to understand the differences, clearly the differences between the two is what I'm trying to get to.
This is Dan Pollack at CDC. With respect to the surgical procedure coding issue, the NHSN categories are defined by a group of ICD-9-CM procedure codes. However, the codes themselves are not a data requirement for the NHSN system. Having the procedure categorized into a larger bin is a requirement. So earlier when we were talking about the 10 procedures that are included in the measure proposal, those correspond not only to the SCIP procedures in CMS, but they also correspond to categories of procedure in NHSN. The NHSN approach in the measure proposal, as is the case with the ACS proposal, calls for use of actual clinical data actively surveyed in the hospital as opposed to use of administrative data. So the fact that there is a coding system for the NHSN measure proposal and a different coding system for the ACS while significant and important, really is not a determinative factor, because in both instances, the coding systems are used to group surgical procedures that are coded at a granular level into larger categories. So the procedure coding system, in effect, serves definitional purpose much more than it does a purpose for actually coding and dealing with procedures at that level.
So how do you see CDC's measure as being different from ACS measure? What are the differences?
Well, we're in part trying to get to a deeper understanding of those differences in terms of the risk factors that are taken into account for the prediction of SSI by the procedure categories. So there are differences, yes, in what those procedure categories are comprised of on the granular level, and there are differences in terms of what risk factors enter into the SSI prediction per procedure category. So we're looking at that level of information as a starter to understand where the differences are and how we can best conceive of a harmonization across the two approaches. There's a lot in common definitionally in terms of how surgical site infections are defined. The definitions correspond to the definitions that have been developed and used for years in NHSN and the predecessor system, the National Nosocomial Infection Surveillance System. The strategy of capturing data according to categories of surgical procedure and analyzing and reporting on the basis of categories rather than discrete, finely grained CPT or ICD codes is something we have in common. Summarizing the data using predictive models and comparing observed to predicted and summarizing that is also something that we have in common. So there's a lot of commonality, but we recognize that there are differences in certain very important granular details, and we need to get to a discovery of those granular details, understanding them in a deeper way, and assessing opportunities for moving from similarity to identicality.
I appreciate that, and that's hugely helpful because I'm struggling with, and you've helped conceptualize for me where the differences are, and I think one of the struggles I'm having in terms of choosing one over the other is I don't understand at that deeper level how they're different as you've described, because partly because you all haven't figured that out. And in order for me to make a choice of one over the other, I feel like I'm making a choice, a blinded choice, and not really an educated or understanding choice.
So this is Karen again. So at a higher level, is this correct that it looks like the CDC measure is looking at 10 surgical procedures and it's infections that occur during the hospitalization, and the ACS measure is looking at all surgical procedures and within 30 days of the procedure or within 30 days of the discharge, I'm not sure, but is that
this correct? Is Bruce Hall, so I agree with almost everything that Dan had said about the commonalities and the shared definitions. I would emphasize some of the differences between the approaches perhaps a little bit differently than Dan, but I don't take major issue. But I do think that, we have some one difference is that we very specifically say the following CPT codes are eligible. And so that's not every surgery, as you said, all surgeries. It's not every surgery that may occur in an institution, but it's a broad swath of surgery, but it is also at the same time very explicitly defined, as opposed to the approach where you say, this is the GYN bucket, here are the codes that we think, represent this bucket, but you use your judgment to put procedures into this bucket or into a different bucket. We sort of take that decision out of the hands of the data person and say, look, there has to be the following code or it's not eligible. So
right.
We feel that that gives a level of rigor and uniformity that we feel over the years we've felt has been a very valuable aspect of the approach. Now, at the same time, I completely agree with my colleague Dan that there's an incredible level of commonality between the approaches. As he said, you know, the NSCIP adopted the CDC original definitions of what an infection is. So there are those commonalities, but there are some differences. We very rigorously follow the 30-day after surgery, not 30 days from discharge, 30-day after surgery endpoint. We think that having a fixed time horizon is absolutely critical to performance evaluation. So these are the kinds of differences at the strategy level that I think differentiate the two approaches. Much more so, in my mind, than the fine modeling analytic level.
So one question for the committee is it valuable to have a measure that's within 30 days of the procedure as well as a measure that is during the hospitalization? Is there value in having a measure that breaks out by those 10 surgical categories versus a measure that is based on all of them or whatever it has been defined as included? So those are some baseline questions in terms of whether there's value in having more than one measure. And then certainly the harmonization issues are important to help with interpretability, data collection burden, et cetera.
So this is Dan Pollack at CDC. If I could just comment. In terms of the 10 procedure categories that are included in the CDC measure proposal, they account for approximately 75% of all the procedures that are reported to NHSN. And these 10 procedures are, as I said earlier, corresponding to the SCIP, the Surgical Care Improvement Project procedures, which were selected because they are high-volume, high-risk procedures. So there was a rationale for selecting those procedures, and as it happens, they constitute a very important proportion of all the NHSN procedures. So we're looking at opportunities to combine the outcome data from NHSN with the process of care data that are reported via SCIP to CMS. The issue of ICD-9 procedure codes and NHSN, again, the capture of the cases, the procedures that constitute each of the 10 categories, is a process that uses ICD-9 terminology and codes as a way of defining those categories. So the definition of each of those categories you can conceive of as one that is ICD-9 based. So ICD-9 does figure into the system and the identification of the procedures that are reported. However, the procedure requirement is an NHSN procedure category that is broader than the ICD-9 procedures themselves. That's all I have to say for now. Thank you.
Are there committee questions on the SSI measures? Any committee thoughts on how you'd like to proceed here?
This is Janet. I would agree that December 2nd meeting, I would like to hear what comes of that. And, again, I know we're up against deadlines, but I think that meeting may give us more information if we have that time.
Chip Campbell, I would agree with that. I think since the date is already set for the meeting, there's been a lot of work leading up to that to this point. It seems reasonable for me to see what the two groups together could come up with before we make our final.
Okay. Alisa?
Yes.
Are we going to be allowed to do that?
We're talking it over here with Heidi.
You have a huddle there?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Heidi. I think this is the less than ideal timeline that we're dealing with. Why don't we, you still need to, I think, have a discussion on the other measures. So let's table the SSI for the moment.
Okay.
And then I think you still need to have a best-in-class and or harmonization discussion on the UTI. And let me see if there's something I can do in the...
Why don't we move on to that, and you can continue your huddle, but it sounds like there may be committee interest in driving a harmonization between these two organizations.
Before you move on, this is Dan Pollack at CDC.
Yes.
If the December 2nd and 3rd meeting is elevated in importance along the lines that we're describing, we would welcome an NQF observer participant to that process and think that it could help us move along. So we extend that invitation, and we'll be glad to coordinate.
Thanks, Dan. I think that, you know, we'd be happy to participate as well. So let's talk offline on that.
Great. Yeah, I think that's a very good idea, Dan. Thanks so much, Peter Angus.
This is Bruce Hall. I just want to point out, I mean, Dan and I have been probably the two main drivers behind this meeting. So we're both in favor of advancing this cause. But if I'm understanding the timeline that's put out, even if Dan and I were to walk away from that meeting with a respecified measure, I mean, I think that this notion of harmonization is perhaps a little vague. I mean, if Dan and I were to walk away from that meeting and say, oh, we now agree that the measure should be respecified in the following manner, I mean, doesn't that sort of kick off this process all over again with a newly specified formulation that I'm just concerned that that's still not going to meet whatever deadline it is you're referring to that I'm perhaps not aware of?
This is Iona. What one solution to that, couldn't it be, if you did have that agreement, that you would amend your individual applications, and then your individual applications then would be common? Not necessarily kicking in a whole new process, but just an amended process?
Right. Good point. Elisa, do we have an answer?
We don't. What we're doing right now is actually calling CMS on the phone.
Okay. Why don't you finish your huddle, and we'll move on to UTI.
Okay. Thank
is that
you.
All right?
Yes, that's perfect.
Perfect. And let me remind the committee, the staff also sent us the guidelines on evaluating competing measures. And let me just read the first sentence here. Competing measures are those that essentially address the same target process, condition, event, or outcome. In other words, the same numerator. And they specify an underline and the same target population or denominator. The goal is to endorse the best measure and minimize confusion and conflicting information. So as it relates to UTI, we'll open any comments or discussion by committee members on how to proceed. We also have the staff that sent around to us our prior scoring of all four of these measures. Hopefully you have that. Thoughts on the committee?
So, just this is Karen Pace from NQF. So, in terms of these measures, they're both looking at UTI, but is it correct that the CDC measure is for ICU patients and the ACS measure is surgical patients?
That's correct.
Okay. So,
to move this along, in my interpretation, these are two different target populations or denominators.
It seems that way. So unless I'm missing something, it could perhaps be that, again, that this is more of a harmonization issue in terms of, and I haven't, you know, compared the details, but in terms of the definitions of UTI, but
Well, I would just skip again. I would offer that it seems like they're two different measures. I mean, they're not. It's not necessarily harmonization. They're looking at different things.
Right.
Why can't we? I mean, I would advocate perhaps approving both.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and talking to the staff. How measures are used aren't necessarily, I think, our responsibility. So if CDC decides it wants to measure ICU patients and somebody else wants to look at surgical patients, that may be fine.
This is Janet. It kind of reminds me of the conversation we had at the face-to-face meeting about the intent of some of these measures. And, you know, it's like the outpatient surgery or surgical ACS one is looking at a different population, as you pointed out, than ICU. And, you know, I think the comments from the public are getting at, well, why do we need two different UTI measures? And they clearly do look at different populations, but it goes back to the fundamental question of, do you want to go for, you know, the ICU patients that we're going to kill because they have a UTI, or do we want to look at good practice and clinical guidelines that surgeons should be held accountable to? And so that's the difficulty for me. They're different measures, and I think they're both good ones. But in the end, I think what people are asking us to do is prioritize sort of the most important one, perhaps.
That's a good point.
Right, but again, with this one, it seems to me that the CAUTI in the ICU would be very familiar to the ICU personnel, because it's the same way they, you know, infections per 1,000 days or whatever it is. That's very similar to what they do for the bloodstream infections. They're familiar with that. Surgeons are, you know, are more oriented towards the 30-day follow-up, I think.
All right. Reaction of other committee members? How much interest would there be in leaving both of these stand?
Well,
doesn't sound like any.
Well, that's what Bill. That's what I vote for.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I would do the same.
I think so too.
Okay. So
yeah, I agree.
All right. So maybe that's our position. Would anyone disagree with leaving both of these stand? Okay. Elisa, have the staff finished their huddle?
We haven't. We're still consulting with CMS, but I just wanted to make sure for the record that I had this correct. So the committee is recommending these two UTI measures individually.
Yes, the rationale is they measure the denominator is different. There's a different target population.
Okay, and I think we haven't heard yet from CMS, but we have left a message for them to call us or contact us as soon as they can.
Do you have another lifeline?
very helpful right now.
This is Karen regarding the UTI measures and to the committee who has been reviewing these. Are there any issues with harmonization with these two measures? Are the definitions of UTI the same, or are there any issues that you identified that you want to address to the developers?
Doesn't sound that way. So, Elisa, the issue with the CMS is the their time urgency?
Yeah, this is Heidi. I just got off the phone with CMS staff, and they are checking on their timeline. So I don't anticipate having an answer on whether we can push the timelines on these two measures, the SSI-specific measures. So what I would recommend, if you agree, Dr. Conway, is have the committee have a discussion about best in class on these two measures. Maybe put forward some recommendations on what you would like to see if harmonization does occur, and perhaps make a very preliminary recommendation on whether you could recommend one measure versus another, knowing that we may come back to you tomorrow and tell you all you actually have more time and we're going to give CDC and ACS a little more time to work on harmonization. But that way then it won't hold up, and it may give both groups a little more information on what we would like to see. I think that may help them for their meeting as well.
Okay. I will open this up for another few minutes of discussion with the committee members, but the sense I got was they're pretty dug in on not wanting to pick one or the other, but let's open that up. We're getting a little pressure. Let me hear from some committee members.
Well, I started this conversation, I think. This is Iona. I just am, I feel like I would be voting in the blind. They seem to be so much alike, and that the nuances and their differences I don't understand completely, and so I wouldn't be able to distinguish truly best in class at this point.
Do I get a few other committee member comments?
Nope.
This is Janet. I still would really love to hear what comes to the meeting December 2nd, but with the information that we currently have, my only thought is that alignment of the CDC measure with the 10 categories that are already kind of familiar and in use and sort of easily retrievable makes the feasibility and usability part, it sounds like easier in terms of the burden. But having said that, what I inferred from the ACS developer is that the CPT codes bring the value of a little bit more granular information that perhaps is more actionable. So it's clearly a trade-off. But in terms of usability and burden, I think it sounds like the CDC one would be easier to implement. But is that a fair assessment, or is that accurate?
I'm not sure. We use both. So,
yeah.
Any members of the committee have a response to that?
We use both also.
Okay. So it wouldn't be significantly different than in the impact or burden whether we use ICD-9 or CPT?
Right.
I personally don't think so.
No.
So for those of you that have used both, what's the value that you've gotten, or how have you interpreted the differing sources of that? How have you understood what it is that you're getting from those different sources?
Well, the nightmare that some of our respondents have cited as a user of both, I would like to get these harmonized and have one way of measuring surgical site infections. One of the reasons we do both is that we've got people from different communities looking at professional communities wanting to look at this in a different way, partly.
Is the data qualitatively different enough to bring value to both of them? I mean, outside of the hassle of collecting it?
Probably not. Skip, you probably know more about that than any of us. I think the ACS measure picks up a few more infections.
You know, I was thinking about that because the ACS puts out the PUF file, the public use file, which has hundreds of thousands of cases on it, the de-identified cases. But I was just thinking, we could do this in a week. We know in that PUF file who got an SSI, and obviously we have the NISQA variables that we're interested in the PUF file also. But we also have the variables that NHSN uses. Which, as I remember, are wound class, operative duration, and ASA one other. We've got that too. So if you're interested in the relative predictive value of the two approaches, that could be done in a relatively short order.
Good.
I don't know. Bruce, are you still on the line? You could probably do that over the weekend.
I think you saw that coming and you dropped off the line.
No, I'm here.
I just volunteered you to write a paper this weekend.
I know, Skip. You know, I'll do whatever you say, but...
I'm just teasing.
I'm not sure how many minutes are left.
What time is it?
But any other response to the staff push to pick one today?
This is Heidi. I would also just add, it's not just staff request. It is the membership, all the comments you receive. So perhaps opening it for public comment might be a good idea at this point.
We could do that while you're continuing your huddle. Okay, can we hear from, can we open the phone lines to public and member comment?
All lines are open.
Are there any public or member comments? Okay, well, hearing none, we're back to where we started, Heidi.
So an update from CMS. This is Heidi again. We've been emailing back and forth. They unfortunately are not going to give us an answer before your call ends today. So I think we're clearly hearing a clear discomfort in putting one measure forward versus another. And I think, Elisa, the next step was going to be to survey everyone. So
right.
We will send out a survey asking individuals to vote on each measure. What we may do is just ask for you all to provide a little explanation, a rationale as to why perhaps either you pick one measure over the other or if you're recommending both. And we will go ahead and do that. Also, any information that you have that would assist in the harmonization, I think probably CDC and ACS have some very good ideas of where we would like to see that to head, but if there's anything in addition. And then it sounds like you all have, I think, to the best of your ability, evaluated these measures, and it's up to you all voting now, and it will then go out for vote. Our hope is that by the next day or two, we will hear that we can go ahead and hold off on the vote on the SSI measures and allow that discussion to occur in December. But we will still provide, you know, have you all vote at this time, if that sounds okay to you, Dr. Conway.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I would just urge, if both the ACS and CDC are on the phone, you can pass it on to CMS, too. The industry is going to be helped by getting down to one SSI measure. Now, I suspect if we can't get these two organizations to merge their approaches, that the committee will end up picking one. So please try and get some work done in the next few weeks. I think we don't want to do that today and then give any organization an edge in this harmonization negotiation. I think is where we are today.
Yep.
Okay, Elisa?
Yes, thank you. And I think we've wrapped up the discussion on the UTI measures. And we talked about all of the issues with the CLABSI measures. And so I don't know, we've opened it up to member and public comments, and so I don't know if there's anything else from the steering committee or the developers before we wrap up this afternoon. And I don't think so. As Heidi mentioned, for the steering committee, we'll be sending out a SurveyMonkey link, so that will enable you to vote on the SSI measures, and we'll include a section in there for your rationale. We were going to go to vote, but that all depends on what we hear back from CMS. If there is a delay, we definitely will not go to vote on this draft report on Friday the 19th, but we'll keep you updated with all of the news that we receive from CMS. And I just wanted to remind the steering committee that we are meeting again via conference call on Friday, this Friday the 19th, to evaluate the two HIV medication safety measures and the two radiation dosing measures. And then we'll also discuss any pending issues that are a follow-up from the October in-person meeting. And so from us as staff, I think that's all the updates. So we just wanted to thank everyone for your participation, especially the steering committee and developers. We know you've been working under a very tight timeline, and so we do appreciate all of the time you're spending with us. So thank you very much again.
This is Dan Pollack at CDC. Before it all comes to a conclusion, we're a little bit unclear as to the status of the PLABSI measure submission. Is that something that's yet to be voted on by the steering committee, or what is its status?
That will be by email. So most of the issues, the comments that came in were about the scientific acceptability, and you answered those, and the steering committee accepted your responses. And so that has been recommended, and I don't think there were any changes that came as a result of that discussion.
This is Paul Szczesny. Will we be able to actually have the measure developer contact in case we wanted to offline email to get some more directed feedback related to the SSI measures as we try to put together our assessment of these two?
Sure. I can send that to you after the call, and I'll send it to everyone on the steering committee. And I hope Dr. Pollack and Dr. Hall, you don't mind us doing that.
It's fine.
Okay.
Okay, well, Lisa, I would want to thank and congratulate you and the staff. This was a large mountain of information you helped integrate and organize for us in
thank
a very
you.
Short period of time.
Thank you very much for taking us through this session. It was difficult, but we made it through.
All right. So I guess we are done for the day.
You're done for the day, and you will be hearing from us by email with the SurveyMonkey link and also with an update from CDC. Definitely with SurveyMonkey this evening and from CDC hopefully in the next couple of days.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, CMS.
Thank you. Okay, see you all Friday.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.